Earlier on, you mentioned that we can get meditative benefits either obviously from meditating the old school way or from using a light and sound machine or even just the sound portion of the light and sound system. Now, some people, when they meditate, of course, have that same problem that you mentioned with the sensory deprivation unit, which is, you know, the mind says, oh my God, and kind of freaks out and wants to think of all these different things and starts racing around like crazy. Would we get equal results if we could meditate properly on our own as using your technology? Or does the technology kind of give a boost to no matter how good meditators we happen to be in the first place?
Right. Well, one thing is that unless somebody is really, really practiced, they're not going to get to the levels that some of this technology out there can get you to. You might get there automatically, but like they did studies with Swami Rama in the Meninger Clinic. And what they found out was that he would go in and out of these cycles himself, and he could control where he goes. But here's somebody who has been meditating for 30 years with a scientific way and approach and spends, you know, 3 or 4 hours a day in meditation. Where you take the average American who's spending three or four hours a day watching television. You know, so they're used to being, taking their information in small pieces and chunks in there. They don't really have attention deficit. They've just never trained their attention. So you can do it on your own if you practice. The key to meditation on your own is not to be too judgmental and let thoughts flow. You know, most people think they're supposed to be in this no-thought state, where if you're not thinking, you're probably dead. You know, so you have to think, and so you let those thoughts flow. But most of them have a science or what they call a kriya, some way, something to focus on. So what these machines are in the yogic state, they would call them laya yoga or union with the mind. So you would use these different sciences, whether it be sound, light, music. These are all ways to get the mind into a harmonious state within itself, to get the mind in balance. And once you do that, and I think that depending upon a person's preferences, there's been no one that we have researched, and we've put literally probably 10,000 people on biofeedback equipment and measuring devices, that we have found that we're able to sustain theta for more than just a brief blip on a scale. They could stay in alpha, which is, you know, most people think that if they buy a binaural beat tape or something like that, like there's a big movement of that out there right now.
Yeah.
But we've not found anyone, even though the binaural beat might say that they're going to take them to theta, we have not been able to get anyone to go into theta on their own without the use of light and sound and or without a kinesthetic. There's some people that use these beds. And they're really good, too. You lay on these, like, massage beds, and they have transducers in them. And so you could actually have a kinesthetic portion to this, too. I don't have that, but I know that it does work as well. But you have to have two of your senses in there, so it kind of works like being on an elevator, and you hear your favorite music, but you didn't really know it was until you're there for a little bit, and they've changed it to Muzak.
Right.
And then the words start forming in your head.
Yeah.
That's because your brain, once it has at least two pieces of that sensory information, it'll add in the third. It does it automatically. It doesn't even take any will or conscious thought. So in the process of doing this with light and sound, what happens is the brain then makes the next step happen, and the person who is the observer or the meditator doesn't have to consciously work on doing that. It just happens for them. Where when you're there by yourself and you're doing your meditation, you know, if you're a practiced or seasoned meditator, let's say you're a yoga instructor or somebody like that, you have your own method, you might enjoy doing that. So the light and sound will give you a different experience, whether that's good or bad, but we've not been able to, even with people who are heavy-duty meditators, see anybody who could stay in the theta state as long as with the light and sound equipment. And we do know that 100% of the people that we have put on the equipment after three visits, when the machine is guiding them through these different cycles, and the key is not to keep them in any one frequency at any for any period of time, because once the brain gets a frequency for any period of time, it then cancels it out as just ambient noise, and it will not focus on it anymore. So the frequencies have to continuously change, guiding somebody in and out of alpha, for instance, down into theta in, let's say, between 4 and 7 cycles per second, it will keep exercising that up and down, right and left. It never stops through the whole sequence. As soon as it stops and stays there for any period of time, the brain will just say, oh, okay, that's just part of the room noise. I don't need to focus on that anymore. What else is going on out here? So for someone to do that on their own, they'd have to be very, you know, they'd have to be a very serious meditator and have a great deal of focus and concentration.
Yeah, and that no thought zone that you mentioned, I find becomes a trap a lot of the times for people because they're thinking, okay, I'm not allowed to think, I'm not allowed to think, I'm not allowed to think. And then, of course, they're thinking while they're thinking that thought, and they kind of spiral into this, oh my God, I'm doing it all wrong. And they end up not actually achieving what they should be achieving when they're meditating.
Right. I think that's why the big movement in the medical community, because they seem to be the last ones to jump on board, there's a big movement called mindfulness. And really, mindfulness is basically taking whatever comes into your mind and allowing it to fill your mind and letting that flow like a river and just keep letting it flow because most people don't understand your everyday life is what you're supposed to be learning. And until you take care of your physical world, you don't really get access, because we're not physical beings trying to be spiritual. We're spiritual beings in a physical experience. So this is what we're supposed to learn. And if we don't learn from it, it keeps trying to replay itself. So learn from your relationships, learn from your communication, learn from your interactions with others. And those are the spiritual lessons. And then when you meditate on them, how are you interacting with them? How are they making you feel? How are you moving forward? How is that feeding your soul so that when you wake up tomorrow morning, you realize, hey, I'm in the right place. I'm in the right time period, or whatever you need to feel so that you understand that all is right in your universe. And as long as you deny that, then it'll keep trying to show up again. It'll show up in your dreams. It'll show up in your life. It'll show up in your books that you read. It'll show up everywhere.
I find that people not only often have a problem with meditating and not being sure exactly what they're supposed to be doing while they're meditating, but they also tend to have a problem with visualization, and they say things like, I can't see the pictures, or it's not working for me. But what I find with the guided imagery that's on your recordings is it kind of overcomes both of those, and it helps through the meditation process. So it's not just the mind wandering all over the place and flowing where it's going to flow and then second guessing what's happening, or trying to see the movie picture while visualizing and again second guessing what's happening, but it's actually being guided. And I find for me that that tool works rather well. And I was wondering if you've heard from other people whether that voice guided imagery is a key component or not.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that that is key for, there's a small group out there that just doesn't want to hear anybody talk, you know, and that's fine too. So, but most people, they want that guided imagery so that they, their mind, I tell people the mind is like a wild horse. Wherever you want it to go, it's going to try to go the other way.
Right.
So that's where the nice part about learning the NLP helped me, is that by using the right kind of language, which is not totally old school hypnosis like my dad taught me in, you know, in the 70s, but learning a little bit more of passive language and getting people to use their own memories. And through there's a statement, the question is the answer. And so a lot of times when you go through and listen to mine, I'm asking a lot of questions during the guided imagery, and those questions actually precipitate the person visualizing, because in order for them to form a response, they have to picture it. So they don't really realize that I'm asking questions, because the way that I'm asking, I'm guiding them, is not just telling them what they're seeing or hearing. I'm giving them multiple choices a lot, too. Mm. Where, you know, some guided imagery, you know, they want you to see specifically this or that, and then that locks people out of that field of possibility.
Right. You mentioned that NLP relies on our own memory as opposed to old school hypnosis. What other differences are there between an NLP induction and what we might typically associate with being hypnotized?
Well, I think the main thing is that in most people, and there's a lot of different hypnosis, so I don't want to offend any hypnotist out there, but in most hypnotists have a direct approach. Like they tell you exactly what to do, and they believe the subconscious should follow you there. And there is, for 10% of the population, they're called somnambulistics or sleepwalkers, and they will follow that kind of suggestion. Like in my early days, I used to do stage shows, and I worked with a mentalist called named Gil Gilley out of Vegas, and we did a lot of shows, and it was a lot of fun, but that's not serious stuff. But we were always looking for those somnambulistics, those sleepwalkers for those shows, so you had to have a big group. You know, you had to have at least 100 people to get 10 people.
Right.
Well, if you're trying to help the masses, you can't just design. That's why some people believe, they go, I can't be hypnotized. I can't be. Well, no, you can't be hypnotized like that. But you can. Every one of us is hypnotized all the time. Most people don't understand the word transformation. You know, they're going to these seminars saying, I want a transformation. I want a transformation. Well, what that word means is that we're in a trance right now, and we want another trance, and we want another trance, and we want a formation of trances that takes us from where we are now to where we want to be. And if we get those trances to form right, then we get this enlightened experience. But the unconscious language there is that we're in a trance right now. Like right now, I'm in an interviewing trance. You know, you're in an interviewer trance. You know, and when we leave, hopefully we'll leave in a better trance, you know, because we had this communication. But, you know, we have trances when we're around family members. You know, we might, if we're at church, we might have a different vocabulary even than we're on the golf course or something like that. You know, so people have different, there's different ways of thinking about it. So when you think about, with NLP, what it does is it uses a very open frame. Now, NLP learned most of its language from a hypnotist named Milton Erickson. But Erickson used a lot of conversational hypnosis, which most old school hypnotists would not consider hypnosis. You know, they believe, okay, there's a trance, there's an induction stage, there's a suggestion stage, and then there's an exit stage or whatever. They have these formulas that they have. But the reality is that everything is hypnosis. We're always in a trance. So what an NLP practitioner typically knows, and there are a number of hypnotists that are actually NLP practitioners, they know that in order to change somebody's trance, we have to engage in the trance they're in right now and then pace and lead them to the trance that they want. So it could be they're in a trance of denial about their addictions, let's say. So we're going to guide them into a trance of expanded consciousness where they can see possibilities beyond using whatever substance it is. So there's different ways of thinking and acting, and I think that when we use what we do, we don't even call it hypnosis. We don't call it NLP. We just call it guided imagery, guided visualization, or creative visualization and relaxation, because we're asking, I don't care what it is, as long as the person, the end result is that they get what we want. You know, when somebody reads the titles to each of my processes, like Create Your Enchanted Forest, let's say, for stress reduction, I want them to create this space where they can go and take a 20-minute mental vacation. And all they have to do then is put that on, whether they're using the Zen frames or their own creativity to get there. They listen to it. All of that background noise that's happening, some of it is conscious, they can hear it, some of it they can't, but their brain is hearing it all. It takes them from where they are now to this inner space and gives them this timeless space that allows them to return back to their world refreshed. That's really what we're looking for in our processes.
As you had mentioned before, brainwave entrainment is kind of trendy these days. There's a lot of tapes out there that do brainwave entrainment. And from my understanding from what you're saying, there's the light portion of the brainwave entrainment, which is done with the LED flashes, and then there's the sound portion of brainwave entrainment, and you mentioned that your technology uses binaural beats. Now, I've also heard of monaural beats and isochronic tones. So what are the differences between those technologies and kind of the pros and cons?
Well, I wish I could tell you I was a pro about those others, but I'm not. But what I have researched, my own research has shown that there probably isn't that much difference, and it's just that what somebody might experience. There might be, some people might have a better experience in one over the other. With the isochronic tones, you can use them in an open room, so one of the limitations to using binaural beats is you have to use earphones. So if you can, if you have a mono source, you could actually listen to it in a home stereo, and or actually have a group meeting, and everyone in that meeting could be experiencing the same thing at the same time. Now, what we did at our locations is we had a room that had 14 recliners, and, of course, everyone in the recliner had their own earphones. Binaural beats have been, you know, well-researched, I mean, over the years. And the downside to binaural, if there is a downside, is if somebody is deaf, then obviously binaurals aren't going to work, because let's say I wanted to get 10 hertz frequency. I'd put a 200 hertz frequency in one ear and a 210 hertz frequency in the other. Your brain literally would sync the difference. Now, what binaurals are doing is actually something our brain does all the time, which is it syncs with its environment all the time. So if we were to go down to the ocean and sit by the ocean and we go, man, we're relaxed, well, that's because the ocean is actually functioning at about 10 cycles per second. So our body actually working as a biofeedback system feeds back with its environments as well. I'm here. Now, if we go into the city, like if we go to New York City and we go, I don't like it here. I'm all nervous and upset. In fact, one of my partners at one of the last shows, she has a horse farm. And she had to leave New York early because she said she was so nervous and anxious because she was used to going out and being out in nature and, you know, operating at 10 cycles. There's actually a frequency in the Earth which is called the Schumann frequency. It used to be 7.4 hertz frequency, but over the last 20 years, for some reason, which if you're into metaphysics at all, you know, they say we're speeding up, and they actually have evidence of it. In the book called The Crystal Planet by Dr. Jockman, he talks about the Schumann frequency and how it's measured, but the Schumann frequency is now about 9.4 hertz frequency. So that means that's the frequency of the planet itself. So our body's always doing that. So the binaural beats do it through two different frequencies in the ears. The mono, or the isochronic tones, will do this. I also have a friend that has who holds a patent on what's called mentor waves. And he has a patent that he knows the frequency of different emotions that trigger in the brain. And there's certain frequencies. Everything in life is frequencies. So there probably is something being created today that will be even much better than what I have. And hopefully I'll learn about it and be able to incorporate it, because there's so many great things out there. Right now there's a revolution, actually, of consciousness and people wanting to open themselves up to these other possibilities. And whether it happens through isochronic tones, binaural beats, music, drumming, our nature is, we've been doing this since the dawn of creation. I mean, you know, you think about the shamans and how they would use drumming. They were really doing the same thing to get people into these altered states.
Yeah.
But now with science, we can figure it out and really move it to that next level.
And replicate it, yeah. Now, what's really interesting is we're talking about these multisensory processes, and you brought up an interesting point when you said about someone being deaf and not really being able to hear the audio portion of this. So what kind of results could they get from just using the light portion and not the audio?
Well, in my book, Awaken the Genius, I kind of talk about the light and how that works, because there's a whole science out there of people that just sell the lights. They don't even put any sound with it. And, of course, they believe that you don't need the sound, that the sound is harmful and all of this. In fact, Jim, the guy I was just talking about, he actually didn't want to use my sound, my light portion, because he was just into the sound portion.
Huh.
But he was very ill in the hospital here just 3 months ago. And a friend of mine, Jerry DeShazo, brought him a piece of equipment because he couldn't get out of pain. And I said, put him on, because we know that when somebody gets into alpha and theta, they cannot feel pain. I said, just have Jim listen to it, because I know Jim, and we're, even though he didn't quite agree with everything that I have, and I don't quite agree with everything he believes in, we're still friends. You know how that works.
Yeah.
See? But he started using it, and now we're trying to figure out how we can get his mentor waves, is what he calls them, into our equipment, because if I could do away with the binaural beats and get the same effect, I would be all for it. In fact, you know, I've just here recently found out about isochronic tones, so I'm going to be researching that more. You know, I want to use whatever works, whatever's going to bring the end user the best experience. And that's
right.
Really the secret here is to always be evolving. I mean, what we used back in 1986 obviously has to be improved upon in, 2010.
Yeah, yeah. I take it also that with the dual induction that you talked about, those would require stereo headphones as well, wouldn't they?
Yes, but some people will listen to them in their home with their stereo. But
okay.
if you don't have the speakers separated, it'll sound just crazy. You can't listen to it in mono. You know, it just sounds like a voice is on top of the other.
Right. Okay.
And we have some people, if you're the type of person that doesn't like to go to the mall shopping, you probably won't like the dual voice.
You know,
there are some people that, you know, if you say, we're going to the mall, they go, oh, no, I'm staying home. They're going to like the single voice. So... because it's called a confusion technique. And one of the things that I learned over the years from different masters that I've trained with, especially in yoga and in meditation, is that confusion is the deepest trance and the quickest road to enlightenment. So we have to get people into a little bit of confusion so that they start questioning their current state, wherever they're at, so they can be open to another one. Because their best thinking brought them to where they are right now. And if they want to go to that next step, they need to get some new thinking in there. Just like if you want your computer to run faster, you might have to get new memory or a new software program, something to improve its capacity to operate.
Okay. Now, the light portion of the Zen frames, from my understanding, is kind of like a pair of sunglasses that you put on that has the lights inside. Is that how it works?
Yes. You put them on just like sunglasses. And the reason for that is they need to be just like the earphones. They work on a frequency response. The one eye is just a little bit different than the other, so you get these. It's almost like binaural beats, if you will, but it's using the light frequency. But with the light, they could be flashing at the same time, and you still get the same effect. So it's not like there's these different sciences that show, that you have to have them flashing differently or the same. What we do by flashing them differently is we might activate more of the right brain during one portion of the exercise, more of the left brain on another, and then get them both to flash at the same time. So it's doing different brain activities. And this all comes from actually what's called a Jyoti meditation, which is a candle meditation. The flickering of a candle, the Ångström light unit, which is the unit of light, how they measure light, on the LEDs that we use is the same as the light unit of a candle. So it's not like it's intense. You know, it's just enough to get this, what we call the optic nerve, to fire and say, hey, there's something going on there. And then the brain activates, and it's doing it in the same way that a candle would.
Okay. Now, a candlelight, of course, I typically think of it being orange, and your technology uses blue LEDs, which are completely the opposite on the color spectrum from orange. So why the blue LEDs?
Well, we use blue because nobody has an ab reaction to them. There are red lights out there and white lights and amber lights. And with the eyes closed, it really doesn't matter what the color of the light is because we're not using, like there are some therapies that use different colors. Christopher Hill actually used a machine that used full spectrum light. And that would probably be best if you had that, but we don't have that ability, that capacity to do it. Blue just happens to be, 4 years ago, they came out with blue LEDs, and blue LEDs are the safest to use in this application. So that's why we use them, and most people, we call them cool blue because most people have a cooling or calming effect when they listen to them, but that's all subjective. I mean, your eyes are closed, so you're not really looking at a blue light. You're just seeing flashing.
Okay. One interesting thing I noticed when listening to your audios as opposed to other brainwave entrainment audios I've listened to is I didn't consciously hear the beats. I heard the music, I heard the guided imagery, and I know that the beats were there, but I didn't consciously hear them. So how exactly does it work with the brain if, on the conscious level, it's like they don't even exist?
Well, you have to hear them in order for your brain to interact with them, but it doesn't have to be first attention. First attention, we like to put the music. Now, I have the beat frequencies are a little bit louder on the dual voice, and the reason for that is everybody has a little bit different taste, if you will. You know, some people would like to turn it all the way off and never hear the binaural beats at all because it just bugs them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't. And if you're consciously being bugged, I don't care what anybody tells you about the technology, it's not doing any good because your energetic state, the emotional state that you have, plays more into how you get results than anything else.
Right.
So if energetically, if you don't feel like you're getting a good program, let's say, or a good experience, then it's not going to work. So what we found out was that was done through testing with, you know, thousands of people, what level, where they would still interact. And the way we know that it's still working is we would put people on the machine with an EEG machine hooked up at the same time, and we knew at 7 minutes they were going to be at 9 hertz frequency, and then here's everybody at 9 hertz frequency. And then when it took them back up through the cycles, they would follow directly with it. And even though they didn't consciously know anything was happening, because the brain literally is learning without your conscious awareness all the time. So the brain is picking up that all the time. And because the music is layered in with it, you don't really hear it. But if you were to listen to one of the double voice or dual induction programs that we have, the sound frequency is just a little bit higher and it's a little bit more pronounced because people who enjoy the dual induction like to have a little bit louder. So we encoded that a little bit higher on those.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that this is safe for pretty much anybody except someone who has a history of epileptic seizures. So pretty much anyone who's listening can make use of this technology?
Yes, as long as they can listen to music, they're going to be all right.
Now, of course, everybody's looking for the magic pill all the time. They want something that they can just turn on or take, and it's going to bring them magical results. And since this happens a lot on the subconscious level, it almost seems like it is a magical result. Do you think it's about as close as we get to that magic pill?
Well, right now, I don't know of anything better in this technology. I always tell people there's only two things that can happen, which is very good when you're doing something like using the creative visualization programs, is one, you're going to fall asleep and get a good nap, or two, you're going to wake up and your life's going to change. So there's really no negatives. You're feeding your brain with positive information, and you're getting even just taking a nap. There's a lot of research out there that shows just taking a 20-minute cat nap is going to help you. So the side effects, or what we call the side benefits, are so great that even if you don't make the change specifically that's mentioned on the program, you're still getting a really positive result.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, some people fall asleep when they listen to recordings like this. Does it still work if you do fall asleep?
Yes, actually, it takes 40 minutes on average for people to go into a state of delta, which for what we're teaching, delta, there's no programming that happens there. You're unconscious. So in order for them to go into delta, now the way they know they didn't really fall asleep is they come back at the end of the program. So if they don't come back at the end of the program, then they probably really did fall asleep. But in 99% of the cases, they come back at the end and they go, "Wow, all I heard was, hello, this is Dr. Patrick Porter, and eyes open, wide awake, what just happened?" And what happened was they went into a state of theta. In that state of theta, it's like if I was an alien and I was to abduct you and take you into a foreign world that you'd never been before, because you couldn't really see it, like in the movie What the Bleep?
Yeah.
When they talked about when the Spaniards came, the Indians couldn't see the ships out in the harbor?
Right, yeah.
Well, that's what's happening to people. They're in this other world, and they haven't built their perceptual filters there, so they don't remember it because they have no way to contextualize it. But as they go there more and more often, what's going to happen is they're going to build their... Every one of us is born clairvoyant. We're born clairaudient. We're born clairsentient. We just haven't used those tools. We haven't used those capacities of our mind. So what happens when we meditate and we go to these altered states, whether they use the Zen frames or they just do this on their own or they use isochronic tones or binaural beats, whatever it is, they're going to an altered state, and they just have to learn to use those mental muscles, and then they'll have a memory of being there.
Hmm. I mentioned at the beginning that you had sold over 1 million products worldwide, and the new one is called 90% Attitude, which for anybody listening, that's available at lwlurl.com/Porter, Dr. Porter's last name, lwlurl.com/Porter, which is P-O-R-T-E-R. Patrick, what is this new product, 90% Attitude, all about?
Well, what we're focusing on, because of the World Wide Web and people out there getting into this new business of marketing on the Internet, which isn't new, of course, to some people. They've been doing it now for 10 years. But one of our partners, Stephanie and Greg Mulak, they came to me and they said, hey, look, we know a lot of marketers. We coach them, and we can get them the mechanics, but we can't get their mindset. And one thing is, especially thinking from a quantum perspective, it doesn't matter if you have the greatest business plan in the world. If you believe as a business owner that it's not going to work because your thinking actually from this unseen world manifests everything into the seen world. So this is about keeping you focused, not really teaching you how to be an Internet marketer, but how to think like an Internet marketer, how to think like somebody who's an entrepreneur, because an entrepreneur thinks differently than somebody who goes out and gets a job and punches a time clock. So with 90% attitude, I know in life, if my wife was once to ask, you know, does Patrick ever get depressed or down? And she says, well, I've known him for 20 years. I don't think so. But I've had a lot of bad things happen to me, but I can either choose to focus on those bad things, or I can say, hey, those are learning experiences, and I can, you know, do my best to avoid them, but I want to focus on what's going to make me money or going to help people or move my career forward right now. I'm not going to focus on all these negatives. And also 90% attitude is focusing, the first phase of 90% attitude is just focusing on building your own internal support team, because there's a lot of naysayers out there, especially when you go to be in business for yourself. People are going to say, why would you want to do that?
Yeah.
And my whole point over the years, somebody said, why don't you go get a job? Because I worked for a while with the Arizona Health Council as a counselor working with suicidal teens and pregnant teens. And that's a pretty depressing job. I mean, somebody has to do it, I know, but I'm thinking, I don't want to do this the rest of my life. I want to do something where, you know, when you change somebody's life and make it more positive, just like a marketer, as an Internet marketer, if you can teach somebody how to market what they feel is their pride and joy and they start making money off it, there's a lot of joy in doing that. But there's a step that has to be taken between there. Your thinking has to change. I never think of myself as self-employed. Now, I think of myself as infinitely employed. I can work for anybody I want, whenever I want to, because I don't punch a time clock. But somebody who goes in and punches a time clock, they think they're employed. But the reality is, especially in this down economy, you know, at any moment, somebody could just say, we don't need your job anymore. You're totally relying on somebody else for your income. So an entrepreneur goes, no, I want to be available to everyone at any one time. And the Internet now makes that so. I mean, I went to work. I do some work with a university called Quantum University. That's with Goswami, who was in What the Bleep, he's one of the professors there too, and we teach courses in 40 different countries, and we do it all online. I go there and I teach a course once, they sell it all over the world. I mean, it's incredible what the Internet can do, and I believe that just like writing a book, I think there's a book inside of everyone. It's just how do you get that book out, and just like I think there's an entrepreneur inside of everyone, it's just how do you get that out without somebody having what Michael Gerber says, an entrepreneur seizure. You know, in his book, E-Book, he talks about how people have this almost like a brain fart, if you will. They have this idea, but then they don't realize it takes some action steps to do it, and it takes a change in philosophy. So 90% attitude is all about changing your mindset, changing your philosophy, so you can stay on task, on target, do what needs to be done to do all of the background work so that you can be the best Internet marketer possible. And that's what that whole program is about.
Mm. Infinitely employed. I love that. That's going to be a new buzz phrase around here. And like you mentioned, Internet marketing is a wonderful way to leverage ourselves. You do the work once and you benefit from it over and over and over again. So even people listening that never thought about getting into Internet marketing, it's a great thing to get into if you do want to have that leverage in your life and do what you love and have the money follow. And the really important thing that you mentioned, Patrick, is learning how to think like an Internet marketer, because there's a lot of people out there teaching what I call the physical, real-world, hands-on techniques. And then on the other side of the physical coin, we've got the metaphysical stuff, which is the inner world things that we've been talking about in this call. And it's really important, I think, to have that balance between the inner and outer world if you're going to be a well-rounded success in anything. So I really applaud this program that you've put together. I'm really excited about 90% Attitude myself. And again, for anyone listening, that's lwlurl.com/Porter. So Patrick, we've been talking for well over an hour here, and a lot of really fascinating stuff that we've gone into during the course of this interview. And I'm just wondering, before we leave everyone, if there's anything that you feel was important to mention that you would like to leave them with, kind of any parting little words of wisdom for the listeners.
Well, I think if they can just remember the one phrase, that there's only an infinite number of possibilities from any one moment in time.
Only.
And if they're willing to just hold on to that concept, limitations will wash away, and they'll be able to see they'll be able to go behind the curtain and see, you know, the professor moving in Oz there, where it's all smoke and mirrors, and that they are at the controls. And by taking back control and taking the time to mentally move into that inner space, they can create and change the life that they have and build the type of life they deserve.
There you go. How to be your own wizard in the Oz of your life. Thank you so much, Patrick, for being here with us today. You've brought a lot of excellent information to the listeners, and I want to thank you so much for your time.
Okay, I appreciate you having me.
And everybody, keep living a life without limits.